You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Mark Anderson from Telfs, Austria. Mark, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, great to be with you, Dave, from Bilderberg 2015 and carrying on Jim Tucker's tradition.
Now, you just got into town there, I guess, recently. That just happened today, is that right?
Oh, yeah, dragged into town through Munich, Germany, and a beautiful train ride through Bavaria, the Southern Alps, into Telfs, Austria. What a gorgeous place it really is. Very foggy today, low-hanging clouds, but the darkness can only be outdone by Bilderberg's arrival. Bilderberg has made some news here. I've talked to some townspeople and people on the train, and people in the greater Telfs area or Innsbruck in western Austria are somewhat aware of it. The newspapers I saw this morning, I grabbed a wad of them at the Munich airport. I didn't see a stitch about Bilderberg in there, although I'm reading German in most of those. But it still looks to me like the European media overall is backing down when they used to be more aggressive compared to the almost news blackout on Bilderberg in the U.S. media.
So I'm looking at the article up here on the website, Bilderberg Baird by You, AFP on the scene in Austria to cover annual globalist confab. This is the 63rd in 61 years, and today, of course, is June 9th. When does it start?
It starts Thursday, June 11, traditionally on a Thursday, and runs through Sunday, June 14. What I'm hearing from a pretty reliable source is that they closed the hotel down, Hotel Interalpen, up on a big hill here, a day earlier than normal, that being today. Normally, they wait till noon on Wednesday for their Thursday through Sunday meeting. But I think it's because the G7 just happened only about an hour away in southern Germany. And a lot of people probably arrived earlier than normal because they were already here. That's my strong suspicion on why that's the case.
Have you been yet to the hotel?
No, I have not. The weather's rather unforgiving right now. It's been kind of misting and blowing, but I still might go up there yet tonight or first thing in the morning. The visibility's really poor right now. I wouldn't get any photos now if I wanted to. There's just kind of a shadowy evening, no moonlight or anything. But the main reason to go there is to try and confirm people being there that may not be on their official attendance list. And that happened last year when I'm 99.9% sure I caught Jeff Bezos of the Washington Post, the Amazon guy that bought the Post in 2013. I caught him there even though the list said he was not there. So that's really the key of going there, is to see how honest their list is. And by the way, they finally released their list and so-called press release just today.
Of course, American Free Press was the news organization that broke open Bilderberg many decades ago. And just recently, they have their own website. Who's going to be there that people would recognize?
The American people that go there, like this Bilderberg Baird article that's posted now at the AFP website shows, a lot of the Americans that go there are not necessarily household names. And in fact, sitting U.S. congressmen, sitting U.S. senators, and people holding current title in the U.S. government are beginning to not attend Bilderberg as much as they used to. You still get some there, but you're getting more foreign government officials who are currently in office, more foreign military officials, defense ministers, and the head of NATO is there. The new Secretary General of NATO is there. But the Americans that are mentioned in Bilderberg Baird include Klaus Kleinfeld. And, you know, who's Klaus Kleinfeld? And that's just what's interesting about Bilderberg, is you're bringing forth names that you wouldn't normally have heard of, but they wield a lot of power. And that's the whole point of Bilderberg, is it's people you know and people you don't know getting together. And there's interesting things about this year's press release, some interesting wording, but they're getting together with every intention of forging some kind of consensus and some kind of plan, even though they say they don't cast any resolutions, they don't record anything they say. But see, that's a double-edged sword. If you don't cast any resolutions and you don't record anything you say or do, then that much less transparency, and no one can come back and ascertain what was done. But somebody's got to be keeping records. This is this kind of slippery stealth transparency that they keep trying to foist on us, and I'm just not going to buy it. Nobody should buy this claim of them saying they have a right to do things in secret and we don't have a right to know. I'm never going to swallow that, and nor should the European or American people.
Yeah, they've been doing it for over six decades, so they figure, hey, what the heck? Yeah, and why are they meeting anyway? We're just meeting. It's an informal gathering. It's not very serious. Yeah, that's why they have, like, SWAT teams out, and they take over the entire hotel. So this Interalpen Hotel, they met there before, right?
Yes. This is their third time in Austria. I'd have to pick up Jim Tucker's hand-signed copy, autographed copy of his book, Bilderberg Diary, which is still available. I'd have to pick that up to see real quick what years they were in Austria two times before, one of those times at this same hotel, if memory serves. But what's interesting, if you'll bear with me, is the press release and some of the things that they put out this year are quite notable. I want to get into this while we're still fairly early in the discussion about the way that what they said they're going to talk about fit right in, it just so happens, to what I thought they would talk about. First of all, this is one of the longest discussion topic lists I've seen them have. Here's your transparency. One of their topics is Iran. Another topic is Greece. And get this, here's another one of their stealth transparency. The topic is globalization. I mean, you could park the entire universe under the word globalization. Another topic is NATO. Another topic is Russia. Another topic, get this, USA. And then here's the last one. There are, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 16 discussion areas, which is a lot for them. And one of them is, curiously enough, U.S. elections.
Yeah, how to manipulate the U.S. elections.
Right now, Chang Li of the Brookings Institution, now the Brookings Institution, as Tucker brought out and as I've amplified, is one of the key think tanks among a number of foreign policy institutes that comprise Bilderberg. Bilderberg is kind of the hub and the rest are the spokes. That's a good way to look at it. And they feed into the planning commission that is Bilderberg, the consensus commission. And Chang Li, in his own words and in the words of an admiring writer from China Daily, has convened Brookings Institution commissions to actually have direct input into presidential campaigns in past U.S. elections. We're talking direct input, direct advisory role. And when Hillary Clinton would lose, Chang Li and his Brookings group would switch over to the next candidate that's still winning in that same party. So when Hillary Clinton dropped out, being the opportunists they are, they switched over to Obama. And so now we have this Bilderberg-connected think tank, Brookings Institution, having been involved in advising major candidates in the past, the 2012 elections, for example, for the president. And now U.S. elections pops up. We have the 2016 elections right around the bend. Now, for the first time in a long time, Chang Li, this fellow at the Brookings Institute, is not listed on the Bilderberg list for this year. That's very unusual. But with Bilderberg, that's not very significant because the people that are there most of the time, which is what my article Bilderberg Baird is about, as long as they frequent it and they come back, remember, this is an invitation-only, highly exclusive meeting of about 140 top wheels from the U.S. and Europe. So it's invitation-only. It's very exclusive. If you're there 6 out of the last 7 years, that's very significant. So Chang Li, as was acknowledged, is still involved in the current elections and having Brookings play a very integral role in advising candidates for U.S. president. And they very subtly would squeeze out non-interventionists like Rand Paul. They would basically ignore him. So you've got that tying into the U.S. elections on the Bilderberg, on their own announced agenda for this year. And I was doing a little research on that long plane ride on the way here, and one of the stalwart media people that attends Bilderberg but doesn't report a word about it is Martin Wolf of the Financial Times. Now, he's a British national. Now, he had an interview with a couple of big wheel economists, one from Goldman Sachs, which has been represented at Bilderberg, and one at Citigroup, another organization that is frequently represented at Bilderberg. And they had a discussion about a lot of concern over Greece possibly exiting the Eurozone. The IMF and World Bank, both very heavily represented at Bilderberg for many, many years, are really putting the squeeze on Greece. And so, sure enough, one of the topics is for this year here in Austria, Greece. And another one is current economic issues. Martin Wolf, I think, kind of spilled the beans in the Financial Times Monday, June 8th, having this discussion with the Goldman and Citigroup guy, and they, in fact, got into that very thing, that the foreign policy banker establishment is very worried that the Greeks will readopt the drachma, rediscover financial sovereignty, and make the Eurozone go from 19 nations down to 18. They're very, very concerned with their topics here this year, European strategy, current economic issues, Greece. They're very concerned that Greece is going to unravel what Bilderberg has carefully helped put together, and that's the Eurozone. So I think Martin Wolf, this frequent attendee of Bilderberg, kind of telegraphically spilled the beans. We just have to know what to look for. At AFP, we've been at this a while, so we know what to look for.
I actually grabbed my copy of Jim Tucker's Bilderberg Diary, which Jim signed. That was the day of that meeting we had to honor him, remember?
Right.
That was, it looks like, April 9th, 2011.
That's right.
And here on page 51, actually it starts on page 50, there's a photograph of Jim with good old Henry Kissinger. And in 1988, and this is chapter 7 of Jim Tucker's Bilderberg Diary, One Reporter's 25-Year Battle to Shine a Light on the World Shadow Government, Innsbruck, Austria. What's on your agenda for today? I mean, of course, assuming the weather clears up a bit, for today and tomorrow, because we're going to get another report from you shortly.
To see what kind of protests we have, to see if the activists are waning in their usually strong passion to keep calling attention to this, to see how the local media is treating it. I've heard, but I have not seen or read yet, that the local media did tackle this a little bit. When I was looking on their online versions before I got here, I didn't see anything. But I was told that the TV and the hard copy versions did something. But I have yet to see that. I need to track those down and see what the local media are saying. Another thing I'll be doing tomorrow besides that, as I noted, is meeting some of my Swiss allies that help me with photography and help me with just keeping an eye on the place, who's coming, who's going, that kind of thing, because nobody can be everywhere at once, especially when I got to get back here to do reports and all that. So that's the main thing. Naturally, there's a lot of front page copies of American Free Press that I convert into flyers and I hand them out to individuals or put them in coffee shops and even post them in windows, whatnot, just kind of pamphleteering old fashioned style. It's really an awareness campaign. That's the main reason to be here physically. You know, I could write about this from almost anywhere, but physically the reason to be here is to create the groundswell that keeps it clear to Bilderberg that people don't buy this, that we don't buy their stealth transparency.
Right. And going through your article here online, Bilderberg Baird, I noticed that a lot of these names, looks like maybe like 90% of them, seem to be of Jewish origin. Is Bilderberg a Jewish game?
In part, it would be inaccurate to say that it is in whole. You do have a lot of your strong Zionists like Richard Pearl, the neocon war hawk from the American Enterprise Institute, James Wolfenson, a former World Bank president who's also a known neocon war hawk, very pro-Zionist, both of them. If you dig deeper and you look at like the Brookings Institution and some of the think tanks and their boards of directors and their advisory councils, you do see some noted Jewish influence. It tends to hide just under the floorboards, if you will. There's not a lot of Goldsteins and whatnot, you know, real obvious Jewish members or attendees of Bilderberg. But Peter Ortzag, who's, let me get his name right here, of Citigroup. Now, he's a noted Jewish American Zionist, an active Jew in the American government formerly and now with Citigroup. And he has served as, in a couple of different capacities, the White House Director of Office Management and Budget and a former Congressional Budget Office bureaucrat. So
he was the head of that, I think.
Yeah, he was the head of that. And so there is a noted Jewish influence. It's not overwhelmingly so. But again, Bilderberg is about networking. It's about collusion of a very select group who are selected not only for who they are, but what they are. There's the perfect mixture, it seems, of high technology, royalty, big media, to a limited extent. I'll say something about the Washington Post in a minute. Prime ministers, finance ministers, central bankers, and, you know, just the right mix if you wanted to have the right people reading off the same page for the same reason.
Right. But if you look at the names here, I mean, and this is from your article, you've got, now, I don't know about Klaus Kleinfeld or Feld, however you say it, but you've got, as you said, Ortzag. And you've got Jessica Tuchman Matthews or Tuchman, however you say it. You've got Lloyd Blankfein.
Robert Rubin.
You've got James Wolfenson, as you mentioned, Richard Pearl, Marie Jose Kravis, which she's the wife of Henry Kravis. You've got Martin Feldstein. You've got here a lot of Jews, and I guess a lot of people are wondering here, is this a Jewish game? I mean, who are some of the bigger names that are not mentioned in your article? Are there some non-Jews? Are there Gentiles who are big names in Bilderberg? Or did you just include the Jewish names because they were the most prominent at the time?
My criteria for this article was not ethnic or racial background, but who among American attendees are frequent attendees. And it's interesting that it just happens to pan out that many of them seem to be of Jewish origin. But that wasn't the intent of the article. It was to find which Americans attend frequently and represent significant organizations such as Jessica Tuchman Matthews, who's attended for many years representing the Carnegie Endowment. So it's interesting if you just kind of throw darts at the dartboard randomly, it just happens to hit that. is it not interesting?
I mean, it is because, I mean, if we're talking about America, it seems like there are a lot of American Jews who are represented in this Bilderberg organization. And if Bilderberg is everything that a lot of people think it is, I mean, they are, as Jim says in his book, they are the world shadow government. So that would seem to lend a lot of credence to people's belief that Jews, who make up only 2% of the population of the United States, and I think even less in the world population, I think there's something like 0.2% of the global population, they have a significantly inordinate influence in important decisions around the world. Is that something that would be safe to say?
Generally speaking, yeah. I think Bilderberg is a broader stroke than that. It certainly includes that element. Of course, the Rockefellers were instrumental in strengthening and sustaining Bilderberg. They were Baptist. You have your skull and bones types that have been there that are out of the WASP establishment, such as the Bushes that have been involved with Bilderberg and the Trilateral Commission. So it is a collusion of your WASP and Jewish interests, but I think it's most significant in its secrecy. And in their press release for this year, I see another thing that I consider a slip, just like I mentioned a little bit ago that Martin Wolf of the Financial Times wrote this article and interviewed the Citigroup and Goldman Sachs guys and really kind of revealed that the topics of Greece and European strategy and current economic issues really show and point, I think, quite clearly to the fact that Bilderberg's going to be really getting into Greece's possible exit from the Eurozone. But there's also what's called Brexit. There's the concern that Britain will leave the European Union. And then there's Greeksit, which is the concern that Greece might not only leave the Eurozone, but could also leave the European Union ultimately. And the possibility discussed at the Brookings Institution, which is very Bilderberg related, that they would have a fiscal and banking union. That means the European countries, and I've written about this in AFP before, would all give up their ability to tax and spend at the individual government level, and taxation and spending would all be centralized in Brussels. That's fiscal union. And then they want to further centralize the European Central Bank to make it like the Federal Reserve. These things have been brought up at the Bilderberg-linked Brookings Institution. We have the Bilderberg attendee, Martin Wolf, talking about it just the other day in the Financial Times. Martin Wolf is there again this year. So when they talk about these one-liner topics on their agenda, this, I strongly believe, is what they're talking about. By using a bit of a Sherlock Holmes approach, we're getting a pretty good look at what's going on at Bilderberg this year by what we're talking about right now. And here's what I want to mention, Dave, is one of the topics of those 16, as I say, this is long for them, is European strategy. Now, the word strategy, I believe, was a big blunder on their part, because they say they're just an ad hoc, loose-knit group of fellows and a few ladies and lassies that, you know, just have a casual chat, and they want to be able to speak openly, and they don't want media people that actually do their job hanging around. But when you say things like European strategy, the word strategy means a plan. And to have a plan, you have to have a consensus. And to have a consensus, you have to have some kind of way of reaching an agreement, reaching a consensus, and having tactics involved. That means that Bilderberg is forming strategy. That means that they are policy making to some degree, and that negates their denial.
Right, an impossible violation of the Logan Act for the American attendees.
Oh, absolutely. What's interesting about the Logan Act is you don't have to be a U.S. government official sitting in your government position and go over there and break it. You can be the head of a corporation and you go make policy or quasi-policy or even put up the appearance of making policy with a sitting foreign official who's a current foreign government official. And there's European defense ministers there. The head of NATO is there. If you're the head of a U.S. corporation and you go there behind closed doors, the U.S. government can and should sanction you. If you, Dave, or I went and had meetings, we just decided one year to start having meetings with foreign defense ministers and having it real hush-hush, our own government would probably come down on us.
Yeah, on us. On them, they get promotions.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying the Logan Act is all good. Maybe private diplomacy could be a good thing. Maybe some wars could be averted if more citizens got involved. George Logan, who the act was named after, was a Quaker, and he wasn't a government official, and he tried to do some quasi-private diplomacy, and our government came down on him. So the whole reason the Logan Act was created was because a private citizen, in our government's view, went too far collaborating with foreign officials. So why is it okay for Bilderberg? My biggest fear right now is that the European media, which has far outshined the U.S. media on this, is beginning to go to sleep again. And that's going to be my main task tomorrow, is see if that's the case. And if it is, see what I can do along with some of my allies here to get them to reawaken to the reality of Bilderberg as a world shadow advisory panel, planning commission, if you will, kind of a world shadow Senate.
We talked about Jim Tucker before, and he had been doing this for many decades. What number Bilderberg is this for you?
I believe it's my sixth since 2010. Let me see, 2010, Spain, 2011, St. Moritz, Switzerland, 2012, Chantilly, Virginia, 13, UK, 14, Denmark, yes, 15, Austria, my sixth one.
All right, so I know you got a couple hours of sleep there. You're probably pretty excited about getting out there. Good luck out there, and I imagine we'll be talking to you probably tomorrow morning.
Yeah, or soon thereafter. But I'll mention one last thing, Dave, that Willem Buiter, B-U-I-T-E-R, Willem Buiter of Citigroup, actually said this: Brexit, that means the possibility of Britain leaving the European Union, could start the unraveling of European integration that started with the coal and steel community in 1951. Now, that's huge. And that's in Martin Wolf's column, and he being that Bilderberg media attendee for the Financial Times. The whole idea of Bilderberg was to build on the European coal and steel community and integrate Europe. So if this could bring about the biggest unraveling since the beginning of the European coal and steel community, then Britain leaving the EU, Greece leaving the Eurozone, these kind of things are going to be heavy this year behind these closed doors at Bilderberg.
Yeah, that's Willem Buiter, like you said, Dutch-born American-British economist, currently the chief economist at Citigroup. So Citigroup seems to be intimately involved here in Bilderberg. And Mark, thank you for the update, and we're looking forward to finding out what you can uncover in the coming hours.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, we got to see if their list shakes out. We got to see if we see anybody that's not listed and assess the media coverage and keep the awareness campaign going, Dave. So thanks a lot for having me on here for this first podcast.